came out, fourth chapter, by somebody that died young. There's a rabbi that died young, so he didn't get his full title, and yet he said one of the most phenomenal statements in Pirkei Avot, in the ethics of our fathers, and I'm going to read it. It's the fourth chapter, and he says like this. Guys, I've said this many times before, but we're going to delve into it a little bit more, and please tell me what you think, okay? So this was his name, Ben Zoma Omer. He said like this. Yes, it was a very righteous man who died at a young age. His name was Shimon, but yet since he died at a young age, they didn't give him his title in the Talmud of his full name. And he said like this, even at a young age, see the greatness of this rabbi. He said like this, Ezu Chacham, who's a wise person? You've heard this before. We're going to open it up a little bit. Who's a wise person? Halomed Mikol Adam. Is somebody who learns from everyone. A wise person is somebody that learns from everyone. How do I know? And he says, because David, the king, in Psalms says, Mikol melamadai hiskalti, I came wise from all those that taught me. Ki edotecha sichali, they used to talk to me, and with your Torah, they would speak to me, and I would become wise. Meaning, I didn't come wise. If people think I'm wise, it wasn't just something that just happened. It was because of someone that came before me that taught me. Okay, then he says, the next statement, Ezehu Gibor, who's strong? You've heard this before, right? Who? What strength? Oh, good. Gibor is a deeper word. Chazak just means like more strong in a certain physical sense. Gibor can mean also power. Who's powerful? It's like a little deeper. Not in this context. Okay. We'll see. Ezehu Gibor, there's another word for brave, actually. There's another word for brave. There's actually another word for brave. Anyway. So he said, who's strong? What strength? What do you think strength is? How do you define strength? So he said, Hakovesh et Yitzro. Someone who conquers his inclination, who can overcome his inner inclination, his desires. That's strength. Not someone with muscle or money. That's not showing strength. Strength is inside. Shenema tov erech hapayim migibor. It's better to be slow in anger, basically, to not get angry, than being strong. Umoshel berucho miloked ir. And it's better to rule over your temptations, to your personality, to rule over yourself, than conquering an entire city. So, you know, someone who's a fighter and he wins a battle and conquers an entire city, that person is nothing in comparison to someone that can overcome his own temptations. Okay, next statement. This is somebody who died young, and yet this is what he said. Ezehu Ashir, who's wealthy? This one you know. Who's wealthy? Go on. Hasameach bechelko, someone who has joy in what he has. That's someone who's wealthy. Okay? Shenema, I'm going to read it and then after I'll explain. As it says, if you work hard, you'll eat. And you'll be happy and it'll be good for you in this world and in the next. Meaning, if you work hard for yourself, not trying to attain it from others, and you enjoy with what you have, you will be happy in this world and in the next world, whatever that means. We'll explain a little more. And then he finally says, who is honored? Who is respected? Hamechabed et habriot, the one who respects everyone else, all creations. Someone who's respected is someone who respects others. Shenema ki mechabadai achabed ubozai yikalu, as it says, those that honor me, meaning God, I will honor them. And those that despise me will be despised. Meaning, if I like somebody else, if I honor somebody else, that person is a creation of God. So when I'm disrespecting them, I'm disrespecting God. Okay, let's go through them. These are four things. Wisdom, power, strength. What was bravery, by the way?
So, Gibor is a hero.
Okay.
Hero. meets is brave.
Okay, in this context, gvura is strength, and it's somebody who's, we see it clearly because he contains, he explains what gvura is, someone who overcomes his temptations. Okay, wealth and honor. Four things you'd like, right? Anyone here would like these four things in your life? Like strongly, successfully? Sounds good? Okay, if I asked most people, without learning this Mishnah and Pirkei Avot, these four things, how do you get them? Who is the strongest person? Who is the wisest person, right? Who is the wealthiest? Who's the most honored? What would they say? Who's the wealthiest without learning this?
The most money.
Right, the one with the most money. Who's the wisest? The one that knows the most. Right? Who's the most honored? The one that's most honored. What do you mean, who's the most honored? The one that everyone honors him.
Where's humble in that category?
Well, ooh, don't you need kavod? Does humility mean that you have zero kavod?
It's a balance.
Kavod is your need. It says, in Azamara Lichvodi, there's many times that the Torah calls your soul, your inner soul, kavod, honor. Because your inner sense has respect, self-respect. Like deep, deep down, as a human being, you're not just a rag that's unaware of itself. You're very aware of yourself. So there's a deep need for self-respect. No matter what job you have, you need to be respected. If you see somebody who's working in, filling up people's gas, right? And you'd think, okay, what kind of job is that? I will never do that. But that person, if he doesn't feel respected, will not last in that job. Yes, we said a story about it in the past. But it's an example, right? Being respected is the need of your soul. It's a simple need. When somebody doesn't respect himself, that's scary. So then we know that they have given up on life. That's a sign that they've given up on life. Okay, so kavod is a need. Okay, and that's what we're talking about, a need which not necessarily, you have to redefine kavod, right? The definition of kavod here, which is not that everybody honors me, that I honor everybody else. That's true honor. When I'm honoring others, that's real honor that I achieve through that action in itself. Okay, so if I ask everybody, what are these four things? How do you attain them? Who's the most wise? They'll all tell me, someone who knows the most, all these basic things. The truth is, it's the opposite. Wisdom, if I believe in God, if I believe that there's a purpose here in this world, can I attain wisdom by myself?
Yeah.
But to a limit. Right, the capability of my brain is not up to me. I can work on it, I can train it, but the way that the brain will function is really in God's hands at the end of the day. Okay, and if I'm a believer, if I believe in God, yes, it's true, I can work on skills, develop my brain a little more, but the fact that it works, not in my control. I can do my part, but at the end of the day, it's not in control. Wealth, yeah, I can work as hard as I want, but there's many people that worked hard and they didn't make it. So when you look at these four things, you may say, it's not in my control, until you redefine the definition of these words. We must stop thinking that these four things are dependent on other people. My wisdom is not dependent externally on other people. I am wise if everybody else is less than me, then I'm wiser than them. Then I'm the wisest person. Is wisdom meant to be something which is dependent on others? The answer is no. If I live in that way, what happens if the entire place, let's say I live in a country, I've never been outside of this country, and in this place, everyone's extremely stupid, okay? And it happens to be that I'm the wisest of all these people. Does that mean a lot? No? That's not a proof. Huh? Okay, so then it's the movie Idiocracy, for those that want to know. But if If wisdom is dependent on my surroundings, then I don't have it. What is it? And you know what? It's not in my control. So Ben Zoma is teaching me that the way to achieve real wisdom is to internalize it. Start looking inwards. What is true wisdom? Somebody who's able to look at others. What is true strength? Somebody who's able to overcome his inner temptations, because that's something in your control. What's wealth? Someone that can be happy with what they have, because that's in your control. Money? You can work hard to make it, but at the end of the day, if you're not working on it within yourself, you can't achieve happiness. You can't achieve money. So how do you achieve that? By finding joy in what you have already, not in what you're lacking. And what's someone who's honored and respected? Somebody who honors others. Meaning that's in your control. If it's in your control, that's the way you can achieve it. Otherwise, there's no way you can achieve it truly. Okay, so that's a thought for you just to start. But these are four very important things. And I wrote down, first, wisdom. Okay? Why is wisdom only achieved if I learn it from others? What does that really mean? A wise person is somebody who's willing to learn from others. Let me ask you a question. If I take, I don't know, let's say Einstein, and we put him in the middle of nowhere, not where he grew up, put him in the desert, would he have been able to achieve what he achieved?
I don't think so.
It would be foolish to think that he would have. There has to be a basis, although he quit school. You know that Einstein left school. He didn't stay in school. He was too good for it. But he dropped out, that's true. But there has to be a basis of wisdom that he had. Someone once asked me like this, a good question. How come in the past century alone, we've had such wise people? What about all this, the amount of advancement that we've had in 100 years is tremendous in comparison to all the years before us. What happened? Why in 100 years do we have such a drastic change? Does anyone know an answer? There are many answers, obviously, because that's what God wanted, right? But 100 years, suddenly people have become so wise. Only now we came up with the electric vehicle. Yes?
Well, I mean, just like exponential growth, as technology evolves, so evolves the ability to create greater technologies upon that already exist.
Upon that already existed. It's upon what already existed, so it doubles on what we've already created, yes?
The technology that you're able to communicate changed a lot in the last 100 years. Like communication throughout the whole world can be achieved much easier than in the past.
Oh, communication, the power of communication. But our ability to communicate came only in the past 100 years. So that is phenomenal, like, just the fact that we're able to communicate in such a way. Like, see a person that's in another country at the same time and speak to them and see how they look and what their room looks. It's like magic. Right? The ability that we've achieved since the Industrial Revolution is huge. So we are touching on the right point, which is that we've been... It's not that they just suddenly... In the past century, everyone's so much smarter than all the people that came before them. The idea is that we're just bouncing off the wisdom of all those people. We're wisdom plus all the wisdom that came before us. So it's 3,000 years of whatever, right? 5,000 years of wisdom that came to a point where we are today. And now we're living with all the wisdom of the people that came before us. We've added a little more every time. So it's not really just us. Do you get what I'm saying? No one can say that all of the wisdom that they've achieved has been completely them. It's always because you've learned from someone that came before you. You've attached yourself with your wisdom to what came before you. So even in reality, if you think about someone who's extremely wise, whoever it is in your mind, their wisdom that they've achieved came also because of their work and effort, but also because of all those that came before them, otherwise their wisdom wouldn't be worth anything. So that's the first thing. No one, everyone is, as a human being, we're limited. And no one can achieve full wisdom unless we connect to that which we had before. Okay? That's the first point. But the second point I wanted to say is, Wisdom needs humility. This is very interesting. Who trains the greatest swimmer in the world? Does anyone know who the greatest swimmer in the world is? I don't know. I didn't. Who is it?
Danica Patrick.
Okay. So, thank you. Oh, it's not Topher?
One of like the most famous female race car drivers.
Oh, but I was talking about swimming.
Swimming.
Never mind. Okay. Race car drivers. Who trains that driver?
Coaches.
Are they better than her?
I think that...
If she's the best in the world...
I think that is she collectively...
Who trains her? Yeah, go on.
I think that she collectively received enough help from people who are good in different subsets, which makes her in the race.
But you realize that even the most successful person needs to be humble enough to have someone with them training them. Even right now, as they're succeeding, they still have someone that's training them. It's phenomenal. Yes.
I actually was going to say, I recently watched a film, I don't know if you guys watched, called The Swimmers. It's about these refugee swimmers who swam across the Greek Sea from Syria to Greece.
Oh, wow.
And it was during during the time Syria was being bombed. So the Olympics created the Refugee Olympic Team, which is for refugees specifically who, you know, had been trained their whole life but had to leave their country. To survive, essentially. And this girl, it's actually a true story, in 2016, her name was Yusra Mardini.
Okay.
And she ended up winning like 4 gold medals for like the Olympic team. And she still competes till this day. And it's kind of like ties back to what you're saying in terms of, you know, you do need other people to put aside the differences to help you achieve to become the greatest.
Right. Even if you are the greatest, you still need someone who's below you to train you and perfect you even more. I've got another example here. Who is a successful businessman? Think of the most successful businessman. And it's a mistake when I say that because we translate success as the one that made the most money, but it's not really true. Okay, whoever it is. Think the person that's most successful in business, he still takes advice from someone, guaranteed, that he's sitting there and he's sitting with his company and the people that are working with him, and he's listening to what they have to offer, what they have to say, even though he doesn't need to take advice from them. They don't run the most successful business. I do. But that's the key to success, is to listening to others, because we as humans are limited. So the key to achieving wisdom is humility, which means that you're able to listen to others, because then you will achieve the greatest level of wisdom. So he says like this, I've got another point here. Another idea is, why is it that we're able to give great advice to others, but when it comes to ourselves, we don't give such good advice? Huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that true? Sometimes people ask you for advice. Dude, you just... Let me just finish my example. If somebody... No. I'll take it. Oh, you're saying good. And I'm going to answer. You're emotionally connected.
Your mother can't perform on her son in the doctor's room.
Beautiful.
Emotion just will change it.
That's a good example. If it's something that's personal, even if you're a doctor, you can't do it because it's someone that you're connected to. Beautiful example. Yes, you're emotionally driven, so you can't think correctly. We're able to give great advice to everyone else, but not to ourselves, right? Have you ever said, dude, just drop her, right? Have you ever done that? Oran, you've never done that to your friend? You said, dude, just drop her, come on. You've never said that to your friend? But when it comes to yourself, you've dated somebody that you should have... You dated somebody in the past that you shouldn't have been with, and you know it, you look back, but you stayed because you yourself, you were emotionally driven and you couldn't get out of it. Isn't that true? So when it comes, that's what it says. Listen to the Talmud, it says like this. It's a Talmud in Brachot. It says, "En chavush matir et atzmo mibet hasurim." Someone who's in captivity, he could be the president. If he is captured, he can't take himself out of the prison himself. He'll need help from somebody else. Meaning that as great as I can be, you can ask somebody for all the right letters, a lawyer, and he can help you. But if he's stuck himself, He can help you, but he won't be able to help himself. He can never get out of the prison unless someone helps him. En chavush, meaning if it's you personally, you can help others, but if it's you personally, you can't take yourself out. You'll need others. And it's the same with us in life. When it comes to getting advice, if you want to be wise, you can't just rely on your own judgment all the time. You need other people's judgment because that's what wisdom entails. Wisdom entails understanding that I'm also emotionally connected to things and I need to hear other people's opinions when they are objective and not subjective like myself. Okay? There is a number of stories. This is another message about chokhmah, wisdom being the ability to learn from others. Another powerful message. There is a book that I was reading to my kid, but I've seen it in many different ways. This story is given over in many different ways. They made it like a little, tweaked it to be a little Jewish. So I'll tell you the Jewish story that's in the kid's book that I told my kid. So there was this guy who's driving a truck and he's delivering Shabbos food on Shabbat. And he's got in his truck, he has, before Shabbat, obviously, he's got challah and kugel and food. And he gets to a bridge and it's low. The bridge is a little low, and he says, I can get through that. Come on, I'm in a rush. I have no time. He goes straight into the bridge. Boom. The top of his truck gets stuck on the bridge. So everyone is waiting in traffic. The police come. Everyone's like, what the? Get out of there. Why are you there? Why are you stuck? And they bring an engineer. They bring everybody to try and get this truck out of the bridge because he's stuck. So what happens? As they're waiting, a car behind them, there's a little kid. And the little kid says, Daddy, I don't understand. Why don't we just take the air out of the tires? And the kid comes to the father and says, that's a good idea. He goes and he tells him, let's take out the air of the tires and deflate the tires. And they do. And the truck goes down and they're able to move it, put the air back in, and everyone was good to go. So sometimes the message of the story is, like, sometimes... This is actually what it says in the Talmud. Lefum churpa shibushta. The Talmud says that when somebody's too smart, overthinking, he gets confused. Sometimes you need the simple people, even a child, who are definitely not simple, but you need the simple thinking to just tell you what's wrong. Just let out the air. Like, why are you thinking of all these ways? There's another story with NASA, famous story. What happened with NASA? They tried... when they were going to space. So obviously on Earth, we have gravity, the pull of gravity. There's some places, like people talk a lot about living in Mars. Living in Mars is 65% less gravity than here. So if you think about that, what that means is that if we were all living there, it would be impossible for many things to happen. It would be impossible for children to happen. Like, there's many things that just wouldn't work without gravity. You need a certain level of gravity. Or if we lived on Jupiter, let's say, which is a much, much bigger planet than Earth, so there, the gravity pull will be so high. I mean, the second that someone stands on Jupiter, that's it. You're not moving forever. You can't lift. The gravity is too high. So Earth is beautifully designed somehow, right? But it's beautifully designed so that we can perfectly move around based on the space and the size of Earth. That's why it says that one of the names of God, he says, Ani El Shakai, I am a God that's called Dai, She Dai, which means who limits, not in English, She Dai, which means that I give a limit to the world. She'amar le'olamo Dai, the Talmud says, that God says to the world, he created this universe, but it's so perfectly tuned that he says to every single aspect of the earth, die, stop, at a specific point that we can never replicate. There are many things that are so specific, like the size of the earth to the gravity of earth, that allow us to exist on earth in a perfect way and move around and function. And if it was a bit too light, we wouldn't be able to function. Anyway, so when NASA was going out into space, they said that we need to write and record all our experiences. So we need to, but when you're in space, there's no gravity, so the pens are not going to work. So they designed and they spent millions of dollars creating this pen that allows them, millions, billions of dollars, creating this special pen with like a special pressure in it that allows them to write even when they're in space. Sounds good? The Russians at the same time were also creating their way of getting to space. And what did they say? They had someone that was working there and they said, why do you need to just use a pencil? And that's exactly what they did. They just used the pencil and it was a little cheaper for them. So they should learn from the past, I think, the Russians. But never mind. So,
Is it true?
Maybe, might be a myth, but the message is powerful. It doesn't make a difference. The message is powerful that sometimes when we're too smart, we ignore the advice that we need from other people. And that's here. Sometimes when someone's wise and he thinks, I know everything, yeah, you could be successful for 20 years, but all of a sudden the business falls apart. Why? Because you weren't able to listen to even the most simple people that are with you, that are working with you, that are there with you daily. So that's the message. As a human being, we have to know we are limited. Even as a human being that we know we're limited, we do have, from a Jewish perspective, we have our rabbis, right? We have something called asking Da'at Torah, which means not myself. I'm talking about people when it comes to serious, serious questions. No rabbi is a prophet. So we don't know everything. Like, for instance, if you're dating someone and you want to know if you should marry them. Rabbi, can you find out if I'm a good fit? Like, do something with the names. And there's no such thing nowadays. The only way to find out if someone is a good fit is to see the big picture of you and that person and explain that big picture. You can go to a rabbi and ask him, but the rabbi can't just make up an idea. He needs to see all the different details and come to a conclusion. But never to say, he's never talking from his stomach. So anyway, there was once a story where they went to a great rabbi and they asked him, some of the biggest questions come to you, whether it's going into war, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, when it came to going into war, they would come to the leading rabbi of the Jewish people of our generation and ask him, should we go, should we not go? Or if there's a life and death situation, should we pull the plug, should we not? And many times the rabbi was answering questions that were about life. So they asked him, how can it be, Rabbi, that you're able to answer these questions? What is your secret? So he said, or maybe they asked him more on the lines of, not what's your secret, but what's the skill that you need in order to be able to answer such questions? So he says that when I am thinking about that question, I'm asking myself, what would God say? What would God say? How does he get such a way of thinking? How can anybody know what God would say? The answer is through hours and hours of Torah study. What are you doing when you study Torah? So when you study Talmud, what you're literally doing is you're reading a passage, then you say, wait, it can't be. And then you break it apart. You're literally fighting or thinking the way that the Talmud thinks about the words of God. And if somebody is able to do that for hours on end, then in all aspects of life, you're able to think, at least think a little bit, like the way God thinks in this world, okay? Even though God isn't physical. But that's a very powerful idea. So the idea of Ezu Chacham Alomed Mikol Adam, no matter how wise a person is, the greatest are the ones that are able to learn from everyone else for many reasons, like I've explained, and there's more. Okay, the next thing he said is, who is strong? What strength? If it depends on others, then it's not in your hands, like I said. Like the person that was famous black belt, and he happened to be near some kind of commotion, and there was a fight. I forgot what his name was, but it was like 10, 15 years ago where I saw this story of this guy that was in a... He happened to be like a major black belt. I forgot what his name was. Famous guy. And there was a commotion happening, and he got shot. It wasn't on purpose, but it happened to be that he got shot. So we've got someone who's like the most powerful in karate. Hours on end of fighting and training, one bullet. It just shows that strength... Sorry? Maybe Brandon Lee. How, was it like 10, 15 years ago? Yeah. Maybe more now. If, let's say, strength is defined by muscles. So let's take the strongest person in the world. Let's take him to the zoo and throw him in with the elephant. The elephant comes, poof, right? Gives him a good kick. And Okay, sorry if it sounds bad. The guy goes, gets knocked out. Okay, take the medal from the strongest human being and put it on the elephant. Why not? He's stronger. The elephant's stronger than the strongest human being, so now give the elephant the medal. What's the definition of strength? Is it dependent on others? Then we'll say, okay, by the way, building muscle is not a Jewish value. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? Being healthy is a Jewish value. And if it means that building muscle burns more calories and therefore you're more healthy, fine. But just muscle for the sake of muscle, that's not... Never have we seen in Judaism, sorry. I know that Jews look ripped in the other sense. But I know that we look, you know, strong and jacked. Goes after my name. But at the end of the day, it's not a value in itself. What's a value is the personality that comes out of that workout, right? The personality that you are, who you are, who you've become. So being healthy for sure is a value. That's Maimonides. We've spoken about that in the past. What Maimonides talks at great length about being healthy and so that you can serve God better. But to be jacked for no reason, just so that I could be jacked, is not a value within Judaism. So what is strength? So we say somebody overcomes his temptation. So what does he say? He gives two examples. One, somebody who tov erech apayim migibor, he's slow to get angry. First is in anger. And the other is moshel berucho, all other personality traits. Pride, ego, all of the other things that are negative. That's in one character. And the other type is anger. Why is anger separate to the rest of the bad character traits? It puts two types together, two categories. One is anger and then all the other bad personalities. Why does it do that? It says, what's a strong person? Someone who overcomes his temptation. Right? Let's say you feel angry. And you say, and you overcome it, you don't get angry at all. Not you punch it out on a punch bag, and you're still angry. You're still expressing your anger. At least it's not on someone else, I agree. But anger is anger, either way. The ultimate level of overcoming anger is you're channeling it for a good energy. So you take that feeling, and you channel it for a good energy. That's the ultimate level. So we say that true strength is someone that's able to overcome their temptations, or the temptation of Joseph, who was a young man who ends up in Egypt and he faces a beautiful woman, but she's the wife of somebody else. And he says, no, I'm not doing it. The wife, not only of somebody else, his master. And he says, no, I'm not doing it. And he overcomes temptation. That is a temptation that's so strong, and yet he overcame it. That's phenomenal. So how do we win our temptations? Because that's true strength, inside, not on the outside. Like I said, then the elephant should get the medal, not human beings. What's true temptation? By the way, when we value somebody who has muscle, do you know what we are valuing truly? Not his muscle. Do you know what we're truly valuing? His discipline. The fact that he overcomes his temptation. That's what we really value. Otherwise, we'll just take his medal and give it to the elephant. What we're really valuing is his discipline, which is the same point. Anyway, so he says, how do we overcome temptation? So Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, one of the greatest thinkers of the past few centuries, says like this. He says, if you think about it, challenges and temptations are everywhere. In front of us, behind us, wherever we go. Suddenly it's work. The next minute it's my boss sending me annoying emails. Then it's dating. Then it's my mom saying, why are you not dating? Then if I am dating, she's saying, why are you dating that person? That person's too noisy. That person's too quiet. So you break up with that one, then you go to the other one. They're all over. It's a circle. From every angle, eventually your mind just explodes.
Just don't listen to your parents.
Okay, there's a good one. Although it's one of the Ten Commandments. Right? So what are we going to do? So Ramchal says that life is full and full of temptations and challenges, whatever direction you look at. So how do you do it? So he says, look at the Torah. The Torah says that at the beginning of creation, lapeta chatat rovetz, temptations are most difficult the first time. No, it's only the beginning. The first time, after you overcome it once, it will come a little easier. Build the muscle of overcoming temptation. Know that it's only la petach, it's only at the beginning. Ve'elecha teshukato, it wants to break you. However, va'ata timshol bo, you can overcome it. There's a part of you that's stronger than any temptation in the world, and you can be your own filter. Oh, you see those emails? Okay, fine. I'll deal with it tomorrow. Ah, but I feel like I need to deal with it now. Yeah, but I can overcome that temptation and you can win it. Your desire for good is way stronger, or what we call the Yetzer Tov, is 1,000 times stronger than your Yetzer Hara, is 1,000 times stronger than your inclination to do bad. With all the challenges that you face, that inner strength in you is more powerful than everything else. What's it like? We sing a song on Shabbat. Kol ha'olam kulo. Right? What does that mean? The whole world, Gesher Tzar Me'od, is a narrow bridge. Ve'aikar lo lefached. The world is a narrow bridge, don't be afraid. What does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, that's beautiful. So once we're all connected on this bridge, we're all on the same journey, we're here together. Don't be afraid. That's beautiful. I never thought of it that way. And I'm sure that that's what it also means. This was actually said by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, who only lived 150, 200 years ago. I don't know exactly, but within the past few centuries. So he says like this, the whole world is a narrow bridge. Don't be afraid. We're all on a journey. This is not the main point of the world. The main point of the world is the next world, but there's another understanding. If I put a piece of wood on the floor right now and ask everybody to walk in it, it's wide enough, it can hold you very well. Oh, mazal tov. Oh, so if I have a wood on the floor, a plank of wood, and it's, I don't know, it's wide enough that you can walk on it. You're comfortable enough to walk on it. Will you be afraid? Anyone here will be afraid to walk along it? No. Unless you're drunk and the police is trying to check if you can walk on a straight line. Would you be afraid to walk on it? No. But what happens if I take that same wood and I put it in between two buildings? Or take it high up, extremely high, and put it in a place where it's really up there, and ask you, okay, you walked on it before, now walk on it the same. Everyone will be afraid. Ah, there's no fence on the side. What do you mean? I'm a bit scared about this. I'm afraid of heights. Why? It's the same wood that you can manage to walk on before when it's on the floor. Suddenly when it's high up, you can't walk on it. It's wide enough. No, I'm afraid. So that's what he says. That no matter what situation you're in, the same you exists. Sometimes the outside makes me think this is impossible. There's no way. There are times where people think, that's it, my relationship is over. We need to break up. Someone was just telling me that that's what happened with his daughter, that they were getting engaged, and then they said, that's it, it's impossible, it's over. And it seems to me that it might not be. In their eyes, because like we said, you're emotionally connected, there's no way out. But I'm telling you that there's a way. Sometimes we can just tweak it a little bit, speak about it a little bit, and there's a way out. Some people think they're divorced, that's it, it's over. But there's a little word here and a word there, maybe you can think it out a little bit and you can fix it. There's definitely work that needs to be done. The point is that overcoming temptations is overcoming your inner self, which tells you this is impossible. This is not. But we know from a Jewish perspective that inside of you is an inner power called from the soul, which is way more powerful than all the challenges you face. And that's a true inner belief that the Jewish people have, that we're all a creation of God. You have God in you. And all these things, all this stuff that you're facing is stuff. What's your problem? That they didn't like me on Facebook, or they didn't like this stuff. If you really want, there's a way that you can overcome all of these challenges. And that's what we're learning over here. That true strength is someone that can overcome his inner temptations. And that's what we're saying over here. Just like the bridge that you can walk over no matter where it is. And we said that muscle doesn't mean you're strong. Something else, I'll tell you this. And sometimes I meet people and everyone's different, you know. There's one person that I felt, that's it. He was telling me he's depressed and he's this and he's cursing every few seconds, and it hurts for me to hear it over too much. It's like, even once it hurts, but it was getting a little too much. And I felt that this person can take it. He's, I'm depressed, I'm done with life. I felt he could take it. So I said to him, what do you expect? Based on how you're living, what do you expect? Eat whatever you want to eat, talk whatever you want to talk, watch filth that you want to watch all the time. Right? Everything that you're doing, what do you expect? How do you achieve greatness if that's what you're doing most of the time? What do you expect? A person's got to get out. Get out of that space. If you want change, you've got to get out of that space. But you can't expect to have change without moving away from that habit of constant. So that was a person that I felt like I can push him a little bit. But, you know, that was. But that's, again, the same idea. When we know how important it is to overcome my temptations, because that's where my strength really is, I'll do it. And that's what the Ramchal says. He says that we all have temptations, but v'atatim sholbo, you can overcome it. This is actually taken from the Torah, but he points it out this way. Okay? Oh, I asked you originally, because it says, it's better to be slow in anger, then that's true. That's much better than being strong physically. And it's much better to overcome all your temptations than conquering a whole city. Why does it repeat itself? First, slow in anger, then overcome temptations. Why is it repeating itself? Because anger is the source to many problems. And anger needs a separate point. Anger is a problem. If you don't fix that, people are going to run away from you. So you got to fix the anger issue. Because no one's going to want to hang out with you. No one's going to, just, relationships ain't going to work. Nothing's going to work with that anger. Anger is literally allowing. By the way, anger, from a Jewish perspective, means that you care. So on a good note, somebody who's worse than anger is someone who has no emotional care about anything at all. It means that you have a good heart. If somebody does get angry, it means you care about the issue. But know that if you're not able to overcome that temptation, if you are able to overcome that anger, that strength of overcoming it is greater than anyone that's physically strong. That's true strength, and it will get you to tremendous places. That deserves a real medal. That's going to get you to special places. Okay, so that's why being slow to anger is much greater, or put in the same weight as someone who overcomes his temptation. Last two things we said, wealthy and someone who's honored. We said, who is wealthy? Somebody is happy with what he has. Wait a second. Why doesn't it say, who is happy? We're talking about happiness. So say, who is happy? Someone who's content. Who the definition of happiness is someone who's happy with what he has. He doesn't say that. He says, who is wealthy? Someone who's happy with what he has. What's going on here? I think that someone who's happy with what he has, not only does he achieve happiness, that's obvious, because that is happiness, he also achieves wealth. He achieves double. Contempt, being happy with what you have, achieves double. You're happy and you achieve wealth. So that's what it says here. Who is wealthy? Someone who's happy with what they have. Doesn't say, I need more, I need more. What's the example? I'll give you a good example. One person, he makes millions of dollars. However, he hates all the people that are around him. This one, he has a private jet. He comes home to his wife. He tells her, I can't stand it. Everyone I work with, this guy has a private jet. He never drives his own car. I have to go with all these people on first class. What's going on here? Look at that guy. He gets his own private jet wherever he wants. Vacations whenever he wants. What a horrible life. All day long, comes home with his $1 million in his account. He has, let's say, $1 million in his account. It's not so much nowadays. It is. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm talking about the inflation and everything. So he's got $1 million in his account, and it could be enough to, it would be nice for everyone here. But for him, ah, this guy, the person I work with, my boss, everyone's... There's another guy. He has some income, but he doesn't make it every month. He's always $500, $1,000 minus. So he pays off, then again, minus $1,000. Always his can't pay off his credit card. It's always going down again, minus $1,000. Doesn't go further than $1,000, but he's paying off. He works. He's always on a minus $1,000. And he comes home and he tells his wife, you know, okay, every month, $1,000 in minus. Fine. But you know what? Look what we have. Look how much I love you. We have all this food. And we're able to sit down and eat. Yeah, look how good life is. And our children. And we're healthy. Look how many, this, how many problems there is in the world. At least we have health. And we have, and we're making it. So whatever. The credit card company likes us. They get extra interest every month. So what? Life is good. And that's how he talks every month. He comes every month, every night, he comes home and he talks about how happy he is. That it's all he has is $1,000, minus $1,000. Eventually, one day he comes home and he tells his wife, honey, we got to throw a party. She says, what do you mean? He says, I realized, I just saw in our account, not only do we not have minus $1,000, we have an extra $1,000. What happened? The mortgage is finished. We've done with paying the mortgage. Now we have an extra $1,000 in our account every month. He says to her, I don't know what we're going to do with the extra $1,000. How are we going to... Extra $1,000? What? That's so much money. What are we going to do with it? I decided that I want to give you that $1,000 every month that you could spend on whatever you want. Meanwhile, the other guy's got $1,000,000 in his account. But it's nothing in his eyes. And the other person gets $1,000 extra in his account. Ah, he's happy. You see, a person that's happy with what he has is able to find joy in a small thing that adds to what he already has. Okay, till now he has a certain thing, but everything that's added to him is such a joy because he's able to see the joy in what he's achieved till now. People tell me, if you're not ambitious, if you're content, you can't be ambitious. It's false. If you're happy with what you have, how can you be ambitious to make more the next day? It's false. Because a person that's content, someone who looks and says, I'm happy with my feet, I'm happy with my eyes, I'm happy with my legs, I'm happy with my life, I'm happy with my health. How does he get up in the morning? He gets up in the morning, in Yiddish they'd say, with a brenn, right? With excitement. Okay, here's another day. But a person that's got $1,000,000 in his account but is upset that he doesn't have the private jet, how would he get up in the morning? And the answer is, he would try to sleep in, hoping that maybe somehow his account will double, or his stock investment will triple, or whatever it is which he can hope. Okay, so that's wealth. Wealthy is somebody who's happy with what he has. By the way, the word in Hebrew for wealth is the same word as happiness, just with an ayin. Osher is happiness. Ayin with an ayin is osher. You can be very happy. You can be very wealthy if you're happy. If you're unhappy, you can be the most wealthy person for everybody else, but you're poor. Okay. You said it. Okay. Wealth is dependent on you. That is the message here. What your wealth is dependent on your happiness and how you want to look at what you have already. And there is something else that is true, that some people, even if they try to be happy with what they have, they don't have a lot. So there is also the aspect of ishtadlut. I put in my effort, the rest is up to God. There's a tikkun, I'm here in this world for a certain purpose. Again, the Ramchal says that when you are in this world and you see that something's not working for you, every single person in this room has a problem that's bothering, that's annoying, that's not working. I wish it didn't happen to me. Know that that's your purpose. That is what you are here in this world to fix and live with and change the world whilst you have that challenge. That's not for us to tell other people, but us to tell ourselves. So although wealth is dependent on you, because if you're happy with what you have, you will be healthy. There are times where you need to know you've got to put in your effort. And the last thing we said is someone who's honored. Who is honored? Someone who honors everyone else. Listen to what the Talmud says. If somebody slaps the face of his friend, that embarrasses. A slap is different than a punch or anything else. It literally embarrasses the person. It says, please don't reference any movies now. Soter le'reo shel shechina, he's slapping the face of God. Why? Because that human being has God in him also. We believe as a Jew that every single person is the creation of God. It's a world. Not only is he creation of God, he's an entire world. Or maybe I should say, not only is he an entire world, he's a creation of God. And therefore we need to respect every human being because they are a part of God. So that's why it says, who's honored? Those that honors other people. Why? Because you're honoring God. You're actually honoring the creator of everything. That's true honor. Not someone who seeks honor. It says that when you run away from, when you run up to honor, listen to this joke. It says in two different parts of the Talmud, this part's not a joke, but it says in the Talmud, when you run towards honor, meaning you try and achieve it, hey, respect me, what happens? The opposite happens, he runs away from me. So if I'm a meter away from you, respect me, you'll say, you'll go the other direction. No matter what happens, you're a meter away from you. So you'll be, sorry, I should have said a yard. Okay, so then, right, if I'm chasing honor, it's going to go the person will turn around and run the other way. And it says, if I run away from honor, meaning you say, please, I want to respect you. Thank you. And you say, no, it's fine, it's fine. You run away from honor, then honor runs after you. So this rabbi asks, okay, so what's the difference? If you're running to honor, trying to get respected, the person's going to run away from you. But if you run away from honor, the person's going to run after you. So what's the difference? Do you get the question? Either way, you're the same distance. Huh? Well, then if you stand still, then you're asking for honor, right? So someone says, hey, I want to respect you. You start running, right? Please respect me, respect me. So the guy starts running away. Let's say the distance is there, right? The guy's running away. I don't want to respect you. You're asking me for respect, no way. So he's going that way. Or, sorry, the other case is, the guy says, thank you, I want to honor you, I want to honor you. And he says, no, no, no. See, also, the same distance, right? It always remains the same distance.
Why not just accept it and return it?
Sometimes, but... sometimes by respect, you know, that's a good way of turning away from honor. Maybe that's also turning away from honor. Well, that is, if someone wants to respect you, say thank you. You don't say, oh, no, no, no. You say thank you, but don't say, yes.
Yeah, no, there's a
please, stand on the chair and announce it to everyone. You know, then it starts getting awkward. There's a certain point where you're seeking that honor also. So that's not... Do you get what I'm saying?
To a degree.
Okay.
I just think there's no harm in, you know, humbly accepting someone's honor. Not saying to them that, yes, you are right to honor me, I deserve this honor, but humbly thanking them for the honor that they give you and then honoring them.
That's probably the right way. That is called running away from honor, in my perspective. Meaning, running away from honor isn't, if somebody comes up to you, you say, I don't want to talk to you and run off. That's just ridiculous, right? But if someone's actually being nice to you, you've got to communicate, accept it, say thank you, it's so kind of you. Especially if I know that I'm influencing others to do good. There's a time where receiving the honor is actually a good thing. For instance, you know that now you're going to be publicized all over the internet for what you did. It can be good if you know that it's going to influence many other people. Like there was a story of a guy. I don't want to keep you here for too long. It's hot and whatever. Sorry, but there's a story of a guy that was a religious man. He's a family, young family, and he ordered this desk on Craigslist. It was like 10 years ago. It was and he gets this desk, opens it up, and inside, like it was a little broken. The wood. He opens it up. He was trying to fit it into his house, and it wouldn't fit. So he had to open it up a little bit, opens it up, and he sees $15,000 inside. So he says, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to take the money. I feel bad. It's an older lady. I was just by her taking the desk from her. He calls her up and returns the money. She was so inspired. She posted it. It went on the news. It went. So at first he asked her, please don't say anything. She's like, I need to share this story. He said, please don't share it. And he went to his rabbi to tell him the story about what happened. The rabbi says, you should publicize that story. That's a beautiful story to publicize. So he says, why? Because that way other people are going to learn about doing good deeds, about being honest. That's a good story. That's a Kiddush Hashem, like sanctifying God's name, a Jew that was willing to give back the money as opposed to just keeping it. That's a great story that you should share. So he got honor, but it's really for everybody else. The point is, a person gets old. If you're running away from honor, eventually you get old and the honor gets to you. And you will get all the respect you need in this world and in the next as well. Anyway, so this statement is so deep, and we can all achieve it. We can all achieve wisdom, strength, or what did we say? Heroism. You can achieve wealth, and you can achieve honor and respect. It's all inside you, and it's in your hands. It's not dependent on anyone else. And yeah, one of my favorite sayings, Mishnah of Pirkei Avot, by far. Something, everything that we learn in Pirkei Avot is amazing, but this is like, profound. Okay, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Of course.